Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith located in Sacramento, California.
We hope our podcast will help those who listen to grow in faith.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
We hope you find them inspiring.
I want to take us for a moment into the story that Linda shared. It's a story that it's upside down. It doesn't make sense in most of the ways we think about the world. And so it's partly why we've decided to set worship up a little bit different. If you've been with us in the past, you might recognize that there are some new prayer stations around, and we'll spend some time in those in just a little while as we move also into communion. If you haven't been here before, it'll just seem like this is what we always do, so welcome in this space as well. I want to take us back to this story, and I want to invite you to imagine how it would have felt. So you agree with a landowner early in the morning, and I'm looking at some of our college students, like say it's 6 a.m., you agree with the landowner, I am going to work for this amount of money for the entire day. You take your things, you make your way to the field, and you actually start your work. It's hot outside, probably hotter than it was this morning when we were running and walking. You're working, and then a few hours later, you see a couple more folks come in, and they're working in the row next to you. And you think, huh. And then right before lunch, some more folks come. And you're just remembering, you know, you're doing your work. It's getting hot. You're not thinking about other people. And then right after lunch, a few more people come, and they're a little further away working. And then right before it's time to quit, just a couple minutes before you're ready to call it a day, a last group of people shows up. And they start working right next to you. And right when they start, the landowner says, manager, bring us all together. And so you get in a big circle. You started at 6, right? These folks just got here. And who does the landowner call? The manager calls who to come forward to receive their money? This person that just got here is the one that's coming to the middle while you're watching to receive the same amount of money that you agreed for. And so in my mind, I think, oh, sweet. We might actually get a lot more than we thought today. And then those folks are called next that have been there for a couple hours, and they receive the same thing. And that's not sitting as well. And then the folks that have been there for half the day receive the same amount that you agreed to. And by this point, how are you feeling? What's going on in your head? You're disgruntled? Yeah. You're thinking, I wish Greg had helped us organize into a labor union because this just, maybe, I don't know. What's happening in your body at this moment? See, Jesus says that the kingdom of heaven is like this. That's tough to get your head around. It's tough to get my head around. It's hard to believe that the kingdom of heaven is somehow like that. So perhaps we could say it this way. The kingdom of heaven is like that circle of people all standing around, looking at what really is. It's not actually fair sometimes. Depending on where you are, you came early, you came late, you have a very different opinion about this. The kingdom of heaven is like gathering around with the folks in your community and seeing what is for what it truly is. That's how God calls us to see together as a community. We stand as a community to see together the depth and the fullness of what really is before us. Do you know how hard it really is to just see together the same thing from different vantage points? Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is something like that. A few years ago, leaders in the United Methodist Church gathered together in a circle. And some of them had been working the fields all day long. A few of them had gotten there more recent, but they started to look together at what is in churches, in mainline churches, in United Methodist churches all around the country. And they were like those folks that got to the field early. They were angry because they saw what is, and it was frightening to them. It's set in a moment of panic that our churches have been going along and going along and going along, and we haven't actually acknowledged that the what is barely there. That the decline is so rapid in congregations in our country that we don't actually know what to do with that. So they gathered together and they started to create a document, and they call it the call to action. So they've analyzed all of this data, literally thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of data, to try to make sense of what is before us. And they've identified some key factors to help congregations become more vital. And so it probably won't come as a surprise to you. Here's some of the ways that they think congregations can become more vital. Dynamic churches tend to have inspirational preaching, lots of small groups and programs, including programs for children and youth, a mix of both traditional and contemporary worship services, including contemporary music and multimedia in contemporary services. Other factors include effective lay leaders, rotating lay leadership, more topical preaching, a traditional service, pastors who work developing and mentoring lay leaders, and a length of pastoral appointment. So we've narrowed it down to those 57 things that is going to lead us forward. And we've said that data is going to help us see what is. So in order to revitalize, it's imperative, they've identified, that we need to come up with some measurements, some standards of accountability. And in church circles, pastors do not know what to do with this. And there are several other pastors in the room who have had conversations about this, and I'm going to give the PG versions of some of those conversations, because pastors don't know what to do because we have not figured out how in the world do you measure growth in a church. We really don't know. We really have, honestly, I think we have no idea. And so we've pointed to a couple of things, like average worship attendance, the number of baptisms. And we hope that by tracking those things, we're going to identify how vital congregations actually grow. And there may be some deep truth in that. There really, honestly, may be. But there's also truth that pastors for a long time have been in a bind, because it's oftentimes the prophetic word of Jesus, for example, when he talks the Sermon on the Mount, we're going from all these folks gathering around Jesus, and he quotes Isaiah, talks to them about what it means to follow the kingdom, and those folks take off. So church growth doesn't necessarily mean faithfulness. It doesn't mean depth. They don't equate with one another. They might be signs that point to healthiness. It's quite possible, but it's not necessarily the case. It's certainly not always the case. There's an author named Charlene Lee, and this person writes in a book called Open Leadership, having a common metric across an entire organization provides not only a unified view, but also a way to make consistent trade-offs. So this also comes at a risk, because we live in a moment where on Facebook you can watch how many people at any given moment in the last 6 seconds have checked in here at the table. So the data can become so intense, so overwhelming, that we collect all the data, and then we have no idea what to do with all the data. I'm seeing some physicians around us going, yes, that sounds like the world that I live in. We collect all of this data, and we have it, and then the challenge becomes, how do we make meaning out of that data? And so I just want to briefly say, I want to confess, if it's not abundantly clear, that I have doubts that the United Methodist Church can actually figure out how to collect this data, first of all, and then once we do figure it out, to actually figure out what to do with the data. I have doubts that we're going to make our way in that messiness. But I do believe that it's an enormously significant question for us here at the table to think about as individuals and as a community. How do we grow in faith? How do we measure that? How do we identify as a community how we're growing? How do you identify as an individual what's happening in your life as you grow in grace? Our denomination has asked us to start to track, and we're going to have a dashboard. It's going to be somewhere in the Ethernet. And on the dashboard every week, we're going to put in the number of you all that are in the pews. And then we're going to put in the number of you all that are in Blueprint, and then the number of you all that are in Kitchen Tables. And thankfully, that number for us has been growing for some time. And they're going to look at our numbers and they're going to think, something's happening there. Actually, they probably won't even notice our numbers. But we will use those numbers to know that something is happening here. Because you know what? When we have our lives transformed, We share that with other folks. It was someone asked me this morning, what's your shirt mean after they took three pictures of it? What's the back mean? All means all. And I said, well, it means that God's love is really for all people. For all people. And they're like, that's great. Can I take another picture? That's what happened this morning. Because you start to actually have your life transformed in a community. And you want to tell folks about that. You want them to know. Because you want other people to experience that as well. So we're going to track some of those outputs. That's what they are defining, really and truly. What we're looking at when we do this is we're talking about outputs. The number of people that sit in here, that's an output. The number of worship services that we have, that's an output. And we're going to track those to see if they're growing. But what really matters to me, and what's much harder to figure out how to analyze and how to measure, are the outcomes. See, an outcome asks the questions of, so what? You went from 80 people to 100 people. So what? You went up over 100 people in worship the first time. So what? How was someone's life transformed last week as we gathered around September 11th to remember 10 years later? See, the truth is, as a church, we've stayed away from that question. It's much easier to try to track the numbers of how many's. It's much deeper for us to ask, so what? And that's an enormous challenge for us as pastors to try to figure out how we help our community measure that. But we're thankful that you all are all here and with us because you have an equal challenge. What does that look like in your life? What is the outcome you desire for our children? What's the outcome you desire as you grow in faith? We're going to spend some time today and in the next couple of weeks reflecting on that, looking together at what it means. Here at the table, we desire to root our lives in grace, to grow in faith, and to reach in love. One of the ways, and I put this on the back, we put this on the back of your bulletin, and we hope you can write things down. We don't often ask folks to take notes, but we think it might be helpful today. These are the ways that we think, these are the outcomes we desire for folks. We desire for all of us to root our lives in grace, for all of us to grow in faith, for all of us to reach in love. And we think that we can start to say, as a person who's rooted in grace, I want some goal for myself so that I want to be in worship, to connect with God through music and prayer, so that when I'm with my partner and my partner brings me to the brink, I can have a quiet center and be at that space. I want that so that when my children push me to the edge, I can have a quiet center to come back to. When school just seems too overwhelming, I want that so that my life can be all that I desire for it to be. And so we want you to spend some time in these coming weeks reflecting on what are the goals that you have for those areas. And as you work towards those goals, how is that going to help you become the follower of Jesus that you want to be, that you feel led to be? So we want to share just a little of the work that we're doing on it. As pastors who seek for this community of faith to be rooted in grace, we want to create inspired and prophetic worship each week so that lives are transformed. That's our goal, and that's the outcome we long for. As pastors who seek for our community to be growing in faith, we want to grow in number and depth the kitchen table offerings that we have so that people can learn to practice their faith every day. We know all too well that folks can come into worship and then go out from worship, and we have two worlds. We have church that's inside and the world that's outside. Kitchen tables help blur that line. They help us think about how is it with our soul in the world? How are we doing good, doing harm, loving God? As pastors who seek for this community of faith to be reaching in love, we want your deep gladness, and the world's deep hunger to meet so that God's love of healing and justice and hope can be made known. That's what we long for. And we're going to track some of those outputs to kind of help us sense where we are in the journey. But more importantly, we're going to keep coming back to those questions with all of us as a community to keep asking, what are the outcomes we desire for in these areas? And how will we work towards them as individuals and as a community? We're already tracking, you might not know this, but we are already tracking some important numbers that our denomination wants us to share with them.
We track, for example, the number of people who gather each Sunday in worship, the number of children in godly play, the number of adults gathered in this space. We track as well the number of people who gather in kitchen tables throughout the week to watch over one another in love. We know that in and of themselves, those numbers tell us very little about the depth of your experience of God in the world and through this community. But we also believe that those numbers are important. They're important in that they signify how our community is growing. And we know that as our lives are transformed in this space through worship and through kitchen tables, that we seek to share that with others. And the energy and enthusiasm that we find in this space can become contagious. And we've seen that over this year as our number of people gathering in worship and gathering in kitchen tables has doubled and then doubled again. We track as well the ways in which we as a community seek to reach and love. For example, we know that 30 of us gathered this morning for the HIV/AIDS run walk in downtown. And then finally, we track the financial giving, both the amounts that we pledge as individuals and families and the amounts that we give. Many communities are gathering this fall around what typically gets called a stewardship series or maybe a stewardship Sunday. In most churches, this entire series would be focused on finances. The outputs desired would be to increase in the number of people making giving commitments and to increase the overall giving. We've chosen a slightly different route. We believe that sacrificial giving in our financial resources is part of rooting our lives in grace, growing in faith, and reaching in love. But we recognize that it isn't the whole thing. We think sacrificial giving is best understood in relationship to all the other parts of our faith lives. And so we've included finances in this series on depth, and we'll continue to work our way through this over the coming weeks. In certain ways, our situation is more complicated than most churches. In a typical church, the giving of the people in the community comprises the entire budget for the church, but that isn't the case for us.
We have been blessed by our denomination. 2 years ago, they gave us a grant to start the table here in this space. And Central and the table have worked together, woven life together to create the beauty of this community that's taking shape in this place. And the grant that we have has allowed us to do some really creative things. It's supported our salaries. It's supported the musicians who bless us with their gift each week. It's allowed us as a community of faith to grow more deeply than many of us probably could have imagined when we first started meeting together as about 8 or 9 folks around that table, or as we started to worship together 2 years ago in this space as just Central United Methodist Church. As we have grown in that space, the conference has continued to say, you've met all the benchmarks. Remember those outputs? They've been measuring them, and we've met them. They're very excited about how we're meeting them. And so they continue to financially support us as we move along. And what we've set up is a 4-year plan for them to support us along the way. And our hope is that during these next 2 years, all of us as a community will begin to give in new, more generous ways for some of us, first-time giving for some of us, long-time giving for others of us. And that giving will start to offset what the conference has supported us with over the last 2 years. So we've worked really hard these first 2 years around rooting our lives in grace, growing in faith, reaching in love, and keeping the finances separate. We've kept Central's finances and the table's finances separate, really intentionally, because like is always the case with God, we did not know how this would go. And so what we've realized now is that we're at a place.
Our situation at the table at Central is more complicated.
Our faith through the offering of our financial resources at this time.
In certain ways, our situation is more complicated than most churches. about in a typical church, the giving of the people in the community comprises the entire budget for the church. But that isn't the case for us.
Our budget supports essentially four things. Our budget supports our pastoral salaries. Our budget supports our musicians. Our budget supports this building. And our budget supports a part-time person who cleans about 10 hours a week. That's what giving supports here. We've had all kinds of other positions that have been eliminated or transitioned in all those ways, but those four things, that is what your giving supports. By increasing our giving, we're going to move as a community of faith over the next 3 years toward sustainability. Remember the bike that I was talking about before? We're moving toward that kind of sustainability as a community. And so we've marked out over the next couple of years how much our giving is going to increase. Just like we've marked out how much already our worship has increased, our kitchen tables has increased. And so this year, our hope, our deep hope and longing is that the giving to this community of faith is going to increase around $3,000 a month. That's heavy. That's heavy. It feels really heavy when you say it out loud in a community. And I'm thankful that we have a conference who's given us the time to grow. We're about the same age as our daughter, or as Anthony and Vanessa's son, who's 2 years old now. That's when we got started. And so the conference doesn't assume that Anthony and Vanessa are going to send little Anthony off. And good luck. Go get him, two-year-old. That would not go well. Like Anthony and Vanessa, the conference is loving and watching over them in love to support them, and they're doing that with us as well. And as we begin to grow and to transform and to change, and lives are transformed here, we recognize that the conference will start to let go. I'm looking at other parents who've watched their kids go off to college in the last couple weeks. The conference will make that move with us as well. And it feels heavy to say it aloud, because we're going to have to adjust some of our lives to keep us in this channel of grace that God is holding us in. And so I want to share a story. It comes to us by a preacher named Fred Craddock, and Linda has shared it with many of you. And for me, it's a story about the heaviness that we sometimes feel in our lives. Fred Craddock tells this story of a friend of his. It's actually a schoolmate. This person is in China, and his whole family has been placed as a missionary in China. His whole family has been placed under house arrest in China. And at one moment, the officials come to him as he's been under house arrest for a long time, and they say to him that you can return now to the United States. And you can imagine the feeling that went on inside of him, kind of like those folks that came the last moment to the vineyard when they received grace in the way that they did. And the officials said, here's the deal, you have 200 pounds that you can carry with you on the way back. And so the whole family started to get everything together. And you can imagine, if you're part of a family, what that might look like. 200 pounds, they've been there for years. How are we going to take all of this and get it down to 200 pounds? And so one person said, you know, this typewriter, this was back in the day, this typewriter is really brand new. We've got to take it, right? And the other person said, what about all my books? I cannot go back without all my books. Well, what about toys? Well, what about, and so they gathered around a scale, and they started to weigh things. And they started to write down how much everything weighed. And then they started to negotiate. That's the nice word for, they started to argue about whose stuff was going and whose stuff was not going. Maybe you've experienced an argument like that. Whose stuff is going to be here and whose is going to go? This is not right. Finally, they get it down 200 pounds on the dot. not an ounce more, not an ounce less. We're ready. And about that moment, the official says to them, are you ready? And they said, yes. And you have your things weighed, it's exact. Can you imagine? They might have felt proud. Maybe some felt betrayed a little bit. They didn't quite get as much, others. And the official looked at them and said, so you weighed the children. And they looked at each other, the parents. No. And in that moment, they were in a circle looking at what is. And grace and love and the importance, it was really clear amidst all of that chaos. And so in this day, it's our prayer that as we get caught up in all the metrics that the world wants us to rate ourselves by, that we can stand as a community, as we will in just a moment, around a table, around a place to pray, in the place that we are, see what is and feel what is most deep and true to us as people of faith. Amen.
Jikalele, 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 jikalele.
Jikalele, 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 jikalele. Jikalele, jikalele.
Jikalele, jikalele.